Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Tanya Sweeney, the journalist, for another episode of Housing Shock.
So, Tanya, just maybe you could set out, you know, you've spoken about your own experience in terms of renting and, you know, been essentially told by a landlord you have to leave. And this is, I think, the fifth move you've had to make in 8 years in terms of, you know, renting privately. And I thought it was a really important, I suppose, human story that I've been trying to highlight the human stories of the crisis, because I think, you know, there's a real disconnect in a lot of the discussion about the housing crisis. It's about statistics, it's about figures, and it's not actually about, you know, who are the people who are suffering within this, and how, you know, just ordinary people are going, they have their, in their heads, they have their idea of who's affected by the housing crisis. But I think it's important, you know, when people like you can talk about it and go, look, this happened to me. And it's shocking as well, the amount of stigma around it. People telling me, you know, a sense of isolation. But maybe just explain a little bit for our listeners, what is your own situation of what happened and what brought you to kind of speak out about it?
Yeah, so I suppose in some ways I have a very unique situation because I'm not a typical renter in a lot of respects. But what happened was last Thursday, I got a call from our management company in the house that I live in Ace, and was told that the landlord would like to move back in to the property. Now, that's if that is indeed the case, you know, that is entirely his prerogative. Sorry, that's...
You're grand. Not like a good phone interruption to...
So basically, where was I going? I was doing an interview earlier and he kept fucking ringing during it as well. Anyway.
Do you want to start again?
Yeah, we'll start. Yeah. So basically, I am a different sort of renter than a lot of people in many respects. I'm in my mid 40s, first off, you know, so I think that is, I think a lot of people think of renters in Ireland as, you know, people in their 20s on their way to home ownership. I mean, this is the long-standing kind of idea that a lot of landlords would have. And the reason I think that is because you look at any rental property that's in the market now. I mean, the furniture is all black pleather. It's wiped clean. It's something that a landlord isn't necessarily going to miss, you know. And they have the places decked out for people who are, you know, in their mind, you know, in their 20s and slumming it and doing this for a couple of years while they sort themselves out, you know. So
yeah.
Obviously the reality has moved on somewhat from that. So last Thursday I got a letter basically saying that my landlord was moving back into this property and, you know, we're given 3 months. And it's all above board. I checked. There was a break clause in my lease. He had every right to do that, and that's his prerogative as the owner of this property. But what it means in real terms for me as a mother, you know, is that, you know, we were settling in here, we were here about 7 months. You know, we were making friends in the area. My daughter, who's two, was making her little pals all around the estate.
Yeah.
And we were settling in really nicely into a life. We'd moved county from Dublin, thinking that moving out of Dublin would kind of be the sensible thing and would save us from the madness of the housing crisis. But as it turns out, the outer reaches of the commuter belt is where the real drama is happening, would you believe? So so I was quite upset about that, I have to say. I felt very kind of like the ground had been, you know, ripped out from under my feet. And, you know, I'm fortunate in a way. I'm on good money, you know, I'm mid-career, you know, I'm able to afford a house. Of course, now looking at the stock that's available is absolutely petrifying. There's just not enough of what we need, which is a family home, or what I would like, you know, a family home with a garden. I mean, I think in this, you know, current climate, you know, looking for that seems to be really foolhardy. And a lot of people are just saying, would you not just take any old kip, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a real, it's a desperate reflection on our society that, you know, someone who has been paying, you know, I've been paying tax for 20 years, you know, and this is the standard of living that I am sort of being encouraged to accept, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, for a supposedly wealthy country, I think it's pretty paltry, you know?
Yeah. I have a 2-year-old as well. And it's, you know, it's a really important age for them in terms of, you know, what they do and, you know, how they get around. And their buddies really matter to them, you know, the people that they meet. And, and, you know, that has to be very hard, you know.
It is. Well, I mean, you know, we moved, like I say, 7 months ago, and, you know, it had been the only house that Izzy had known. And, you know, she, when we moved, there was a lot of, where the hell am I? You know, I could feel it from her. And we were really putting a good face. And we're like, this is our lovely new big house, you know, and we had a bit more space. We had a garden, you know, but she took it, you know, kind of hard, you know. She was, what was she, just coming up on 2 at the time. There was a lot of sleepless nights. There was a lot of having to settle her in. She got sores on her mouth because of stress, we were told by the doctor. So we felt I felt very, very guilty about this. You know, how, you know, moving her from pillar to post. And, you know, a couple of my friends have said, you know what, it's fine. She has two parents who love her and you're doing the best by her. So don't worry about it. But I have to say, you know, who's to say the next place we move, we won't have to move again? I mean, is this going to become a motif in her life where she, you know, she meets little friends or she goes to school or goes to an after school club and she has to be wrenched out of it and settled in somewhere else? I mean, I started reading literature online and apparently if a child moves, you know, more than 3 or 4 times in their earliest years, I mean, it sets them up for anxiety and it really hardwires them for a lot of mental health challenges, which, you know, as a parent, you feel absolutely amazing about, you know. So, but in this situation, it can't have been helped, you know. So I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, I started looking at houses and, you know, you're looking at €3,000 for anything that's, you know, remotely kind of, well, I'm not saying remotely livable, but, you know, the standard that you would like in your mid-40s, you know, so.
€3,000 is just insane. That is just.
It's bonkers, you know, it really is. And, you know, like I say, a lot of my friends are like, you know what, just take the crappy 2-bedroom apartment, you know. And like, I'm one of these people, and this is the other thing that I've been told to essentially shelve, you know, I'm one of these people, I really like to live somewhere I'm comfortable and happy in. I spend all of my time in my house. I work from home.
Yeah. So,
you know, the idea of moving into a 2-bedroom apartment that has magnolia walls, I mean, that might sound terribly snobby, but you know, I think that your environment is really, really important for your kind of mental well-being and just how you feel about your life, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm spending money on that, to be honest.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I think it's a really important point. You know, there's two important points that I think what, you know, you're shown that one is that children, and of course it's true, you know, the most important factors in children's lives is they have, you know, parents, guardians, adults who love them and care for them. And you know, they are the ultimate factors that determine, you know, how children, you know, develop, obviously, along with other socioeconomic issues, and they all impact. But in terms of that, you know, it does impact that those changes impact on children. And we know, you know, you're right in terms of mental health wise and that it does, it impacts, and it can't but have an impact, you know, that change. And I think it's a terrible indictment on our system that we don't put that as a value within when we measure policies and their impacts and that, you know.
I don't think anyone's even caring about the human experience here, you know. I mean, I think there's a situation where, okay, you know, families are, you know, don't have security of tenure. That's just tough. We have bigger things to worry about, you know, or it just seems to me that this government, you know, like I say, there are so many things wrong with this country at the moment that, you know, a family having to move house just seems to be one of a number of things, you know. So I don't know, but you know, and there are a lot of different type of things. I mean, the blistering irony about our situation is that we could have afforded this house to buy. It was on the market last July. We could have afforded our house comfortably, but because we were self-employed at the time, the banks basically put the phones down on us, you know, during the pandemic. And we ended up paying €2,000 a month for a house that, had we been able to buy it with a mortgage, would have cost us €1,000 a month. I mean, it's kind of laughable how there's just, you know, the joined up thinking in this country is non-existent, you know. And I mean, right now, like I say, I think I mentioned this in the Irish Times piece as well. I have an apartment in negative equity, and that's just been a millstone around my neck. And by the time I pay the tax on the rental income and the management fees and all the rest of it, I'm out of pocket every month, you know, which most renters aren't. So, you know, and I've been basically told to, you know, that's a bit of a my diamond shoes are too tight scenario. But, you know, an asset is only an asset when it's worth something to you. And, you know, I think from the minute I bought that apartment in Dublin 8, it has just ended up costing me money, to be honest, you know.
Well, it's a really interesting, you know, thing that an example, I think, of how the conversion of housing into investment assets, you know, rather than homes, leads to this problem that, you know, we've had this boom and bust in housing prices and, you know, people have been like, there's a lot of people who are renting, not a lot, but there are some people who, and I know of other people who are renting, who own a property somewhere else that isn't suitable or they're, you know, for whatever reason. And as you say, it's costing. And, you know, in my view, in that situation where, you know, the state is there, it needs properties. My view is it should be bought, you know, it should be sold and the debt written off. That there should be a situation whereby people, you know, can actually go, this property isn't working for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the thing that's standing in our way a lot, or my way, you know, is that my partner isn't going to be a first time buyer, and yet he is being penalized as a second time buyer. Like, we have to come up with a 20% deposit. We do not get to avail of any buy to let schemes or any incentives that the government has. Yeah. Given to first-time buyers, you know. And, you know, I think there is that thing where they're trying to disincentivize people to buy a number of different places, you know. But at the same time, the reality is there are people, real people, who are struggling within those conditions as well, you know. So we just have to keep saving. And when you're paying, we'll say, the guts of €3,000 a month to live somewhere, or €2,000 it was for me, saving for a deposit is fairly impossible, you know. So, yeah, it's...
And I think as well, the other interesting thing that strikes me is the idea of expectations. And what you said a number of times there, that people saying to you, and I know, you know, the... you know, politicians or government might be saying the same thing. And I've heard it said, like, oh, you know, your expectations are too high. You should just accept, you know, as you said, the crummy apartment or whatever it is. And people go, you know, oh, well, at least it's a roof over your head. And I think that we have to say, no, housing is more important than that, which is your point, that, you know, yeah, people need a decent standard home. They need an appropriate home. And yeah, people need to say, this isn't acceptable.
Yeah, and I said that in my piece in the Irish Independent, you know. I was like, you know, people are saying to me, you know, just suck it up, and you're expecting an extra bedroom to work out of. I mean, that's a bit rich, isn't it? And, you know, I mean, our expectations of housing is so low right now that just to have any roof over your head anywhere, you know, is kind of the norm. And to have any kind of expectations about living in a, we'll say, comfortable area or living with extra space, I mean, that just seems to be flahoolock beyond anything. And I find that really quite depressing, you know, that at 44 and having worked, and, you know, that, you know, you're being told that, you know, this is the standard of living that is available to you. And had you played your cards right somewhere else down the line, you know, I mean, had I bought my apartment even 6 months later, I would be in a very, very different position, you know. But I didn't. So I found myself just in, you know, there's been a run of bad luck there, you know. And I did try and sell the apartment, and I couldn't get, you know, anywhere near it. I would have actually lost money on it. So it just didn't seem like the right decision, you know. So
people listening might be wondering, though, why wouldn't you live in the apartment?
Because this is the thing. I want my daughter to have her own bedroom. I want her to, you know, have a garden, and I don't want her to raise her in the city centre. And, you know, I mean, so many people have said, just go back to the apartment. And, you know, I was raised in a 3-bed semi with a garden, and it was fairly humble upbringing, you know. But, and my parents worked very, very hard, and I worked very, very hard to get myself to a certain standard of living, you know. I mean, I have 2 master's degrees, do you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that education and you know, standard of living are necessarily one and the same, but I've worked very, very hard to enjoy a certain standard of living, and it's just not available to me right now, you know.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a very important point, that, again, this idea of expectations and what's considered reasonable or not, and people's, you know, because we've heard this idea of choices and people making bad choices, and that it's actually what there's not enough. And of course, a lot of that is about trying to deflect blame and responsibility away from the policy decisions that have created this absolute mess. Like you talked about, oh, I had bad luck around timing. Well, it wasn't your bad luck. It was decisions that were made in terms of the Celtic Tiger boom that, you know, fueled house prices, that, you know, made them investments, that, you know, and very bad decisions that were made by policymakers that led to a boom and then a bust. And now we're back there again. And I think that's a really interesting one, that there's this individualization of responsibility for housing. And I think that's a mistake. Housing should be something as a society we work to ensure everybody has.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, you know, and like I say, you know, there should be a certain stock of housing for people at different stages of their lives, you know, and we're just getting to a point now where it's you know, almost every, the one thing I've also noticed conversation wise is all these, oh, there's all these family houses and people should be getting out of those, you know, and rattling around these big houses that they've had for years. It is entirely that person's right to stay in that family home. They worked for it. They, you know, it's not like move out of the way because you've got four extra bedrooms there, you know. I mean, that's, you know, and this sort of, you know, incentives to kind of for downsizers, you know, like those people lived and worked hard for those houses and let them stay there, you know, and it shouldn't be a question of get out of there because a family needs it, you know. That annoys me.
Yeah.
To be honest, you know.
No, it's an interesting one because it again brings it back to, I think, the importance of home and what is home. And so home being something that has been completely and utterly commodified and reduced to this shelter, rather than what, for example, in your case, you're saying, I want to provide and should be able to provide a home for my child where they have a room of their own, a bedroom of their own, a back garden or outside space or whatever it is. And there's enough space that we can have this home and that and be and actually, most importantly, which I think your story highlights, have security. Know that we're going to be here and not be worried that we're going to be evicted in a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, that we have our lives here.
Absolutely. Well, that's why I moved out of Dublin. I thought I was doing the smart thing by moving out into Kildare, you know, and I figured, well, there won't be that heat involved in the housing market in Kildare. Well, guess what? It's bonkers. I've already gone to see two houses and they're both recently bought by as investment properties, and that's fine, you know, if you have the money to plonk down, you know, 400,000 euro or whatever it is on a investment property, that's great for you, but it's not necessarily very helpful for me, you know. So and I think there's a thing where people want to obviously optimize those investments, so there's no talking to anyone going, you know what, I think 2,500 a month is a lot for a three bedroom house, you know, do you feel like dropping it, you know? No, there's no kind of room for that kind of conversation at all at the moment, you know.
So. But that brings into the element of it's pure greed that's pushing up the rents.
Well, I mean, what I find kind of interesting is, you know,
maximizing your return on your investment.
Yeah, well, you know, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, the rent on my place in Dublin 8 is a good 500 euro under what other properties in the area are getting for it, you know what I mean? But I just don't want to be that person either, you know. I'm a soft sap, like, you know, but I've always been very sort of, I do not want to be that person who's just, you know, hard-nosed about it, you know, that kind of way. I always be kind, and sometimes it's bitten me in the arse and some people have taken advantage of that, and, you know, sometimes it's been absolutely fine, you know, but
there are clearly landlords taking advantage of the situation right now.
Well, I mean, the fact that you'll see a lot of rounded figures on Daft means that they are not necessarily playing by the rent pressure zone kind of regulations. You know, you might see a couple of ones where it's at 2170 and they've obviously come up the 4% or whatever. But I'm not sure you see too many of them at the moment, to be honest, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And just in terms of that rental security, you know, if you had that security, how would you feel that things would be different? Like that long-term security of tenure?
Do you know, well, the long-term security of tenure would be absolutely incredible, you know, and you would be able to settle down and know what school you're going to send your child to, or if you're going to send her to a GAA club that you won't have to move her out of it in a couple of months, you know. I mean, I know people who have rented long-term from very, very decent landlords and they've been in their houses for decades, you know, and it's as good as owning the home, you know. But yeah. I mean, it seems to me that security of tenure is, you can never really escape it. I mean, even if you have signed a lease and you get on like gangbusters with your landlord, I mean, I think there's still that cloud over your head, this could end tomorrow. It's happened to me a number of times in the last 5 years. I mean, I was in a lovely apartment in Rathmines and it happened, and I was kind of fine about it. I was bummed, you know, having to move out. But at the same time, it's a very different thing moving with a child, to be honest. You know, it's much more, you know, there's definitely a part of me, even though it's out of my control entirely, I feel like a failure, and I feel like I'm not providing, you know, the stability and the home that my kid deserves.
Yeah, no, that's very hard. And your experience is replicated across people, you know, that I talk to and I've researched with who would talk about that. Parents would really talk about that a lot, that sense of, you know, failing their children because of a housing situation. And, you know, and when I talk to people, say, of course, it's not actually your fault. This is a housing system that is broken, that is meaning you can't, like if the government, which it could do tomorrow, introduced, you know, removed that ability of landlords to evict tenants for sale, you know, to move family members in. Like, I think there needs to be a change, a massive change, that if you're renting your property, you're renting it as a home.
I think that there's a culture, though, that needs to be dismantled from the ground up. I mean, there's a real us versus them with landlords and tenants. You know, it is not a symbiotic, harmonious relationship at all. There's always that kind of suspicion and get them to the punch. And, you know, I've been on both sides of that. I've been on the other side as a landlord where, you know, people have just been, you know, really kind of callous or whatever, you know. But, you know, I think that there's a culture there about how we feel about renting in Ireland, and, you know, that is that where we need to start, you know. So like, landlords need to provide accommodation that doesn't, it's not an afterthought, it's not the cheapest carpet that money can buy or won't buy, you know. I mean, they're just, you know, you just have to make them sort of comfortable for people, and so that they'll stay, you know. And I you know, or allow them to do what they want with the place, provided that they return it exactly as they found it, you know. So this whole thing about not being able to put a picture on the wall, as you can see, I didn't bother my arse with that. But you know, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, you know, treating people in their 40s like idiots, you know.
Yeah. And listen, I'm conscious of time, and I appreciate, you know, you coming on and talking about it. And because I think it's really, really important. And as I said, part of what I've been trying to do over the last couple of months, really since the investment fund, you know, that whole kind of public outcry over the investment fund buying those units in Maynooth has been, you know, people have been contacting me with their stories, is actually to get us talking about this, because I think there is a real lack of understanding amongst a lot of people of, you know, how does the housing crisis affect people? And, you know, I think there needs to be more talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all very well reading a headline and going, God, that's terrible about what's happening with vulture funds. But, you know, when you realize that it's your neighbor across the road that's on their way out, you know. And I think it's funny because I've been talking to a couple of my neighbors here and they're really shocked. And I'm like, well, who did you think all this stuff in the news was happening to? You know, do you think it was happening?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's happening everywhere and all the time, you know, and you're going to come across somebody who it's happening to, you know. And I mean, that's the thing. And if you're renting, it could be you that's on the block next, you know, not just a person in a housing estate in Maynooth or wherever else, you know, that you can think of as a faceless entity of just renters, you know. So.
And if you were talking to the Minister for Housing now, what would you tell him to do?
Oh, Christ.
I'd restrain your hands. It's all right.
Yeah.
No ringing next.
You know what? I'd say the same thing I'd say to any politician. It's like, stop being paralyzed by indecision. And, you know, I just don't understand how, you know, politicians talk such a good game when they're outside the system, you know, and the promises that are made and talk about, you know, in opposition, Jesus, you think that these people are going to be able to turn water into wine. The second they get a position in government or a position in the cabinet, it's not the cabinet in Ireland, but, you know, within the Dáil, like, they just seem to, I don't know what happens. They're neutered, you know, and they're just seem to be completely obsessed with the preservation of power and not doing and not saying anything offensive to their supposed electorate, which means they end up doing nothing at all, you know. And you know, like, I think when people take affirmative action, like the red pressure zone, you also have to factor in the fact that people are cute whores, you know, and if you say to a landlord, you know, you're only going to be able to put this up 4% a year, they're going to front end, as they did, you know, before that date, they front ended the, you know, the loan, the rent increases to make up for that, you know, and that caused absolute mayhem, as we know.
Yeah.
So, you know, they need to just start listening to people and listening to the human experiences and the human cost of this and just start taking action where, you know, the renter, because renters vote too, guys, you know, believe it or not, you know, they just seem to be this weird, you know, sort of mass of people that don't have any kind of voice, you know? So I don't know. It's it just seems to be such a massive thing. I wouldn't even know where a politician would begin with it, to be honest.
Well, I think from listening to your story, you, absolutely, as you said, you would start by listening to people. And I think there's measures they could put in place straight away in terms of renters and protecting renters from, particularly around security of tenure. I think that there's measures that they could do immediately around removing that ability of landlords to evict tenants for sale and to move family members in. And, you know, those things, you know, landlords will say, oh, this is an infringement on our property rights. And then I say, well, OK, let's have this referendum on the Constitution to put a right to housing in there that, you know, has been promised. And let's just say we're changing, as you say, this root and branch culture change and how, you know, landlords have to operate. And of course, tenants as part of that, that we.
Well, transparency would be a great start. I mean, like, if it came to it now, and I'm not saying this is what's happening with my landlord at all, but, like, you know, if it were the case where he's moving in air quotes, and 2 months later he decides to move back out, I mean, you know, there needs to be a situation where it's completely transparent, you know, if someone is doing something or moving someone in. And also, if that happens and they're caught doing that, like, the penalties need to be fairly immense, you know. I mean, you know, sort of a slap on the wrist and don't do that again. They need to be, you know, a person, if they are in that situation and found to be, you know, moved out, so somebody could, you know, do it up, gussy it up, and then get a grand more a month. I mean, they need to be, you know, they need to be really, those people that are being booted out need to be reimbursed, you know, quite.
Yeah.
Think, you know,
yeah,
and that doesn't happen right now, you know, despite the lip service paid to that part of the system, you know.
Yeah No, I agree. Well, listen, Tanya, I really appreciate you coming on, and best of luck with it, and for you and your family. And, you know, it's it is hard, and, you know, best of luck.
I'll keep you posted. Hopefully I'll end up in somewhere, you know, and I'm not looking to live in a Martello Tower in Dalkey, by the way. That's the other thing I should say. Like, I am, you know, just looking for a place where I, you know, turn the key and don't want to, you know, feel like an abject failure. You know, it's not too much to ask for when you think of it.
No, it's absolutely not. Tanya Sweeney, thank you so much for joining me on Reboot Republic today.
Thanks, Rory.